Well, thank you very much for tuning in again. You're here joining us in the Planet Office, and today we've got Planet Poetry, the cup of tea in the morning for your poetry day. Nia Davis, thank you very much for coming in. You have come a long way, but you're doing some work in the Aberystwyth area, so we thought we'd grab you. So thanks for that. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. I've had three cups of tea. I'm ready to talk.
Three cups of poetry tea?
Yeah, special poetry.
Excellent. No.
Chai.
But anyway, thank you very much for coming in. I've said that already. But you are the new editor of Poetry Wales, and I guess that's the crux. People are looking forward to seeing what you're going to do, what's your vision for the magazine. But before we start discussing the future, let's talk a little bit about your past, where you've come from, what you've been doing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your kind of general upbringing and what's led you down this merry path?
Well, I was brought up in Sheffield, where I came from this week, actually. I've been staying there recently. So I was brought up in Sheffield. My mum's Welsh, and we spent a lot of time here in Aberystwyth and all over Wales, actually. So, and my Welsh family are extremely literary. And I was writing poetry and reading poetry and stories, and consumed lots of stories as a child and from quite an early age. And then, just over the years, got more and more into poetry, really. And I don't know why. Sometimes I, wonder why I'm not into something else.
I tend to ask people, how did you get into poetry? And I always think there's going to be sort of, well, it was 12th of March and I fell into a big bowl of poetry. But, it's a gradual thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I suppose if language was of a big interest to you, I was quite young. I was always into, the way words sounded and played. And
is that an aspect of, you've got sort of two cultural backgrounds?
Yeah. My mother's Welsh-speaking and my family were Welsh-speaking. So there was two languages around me, even though I didn't really pick up Welsh enough in Sheffield. It was quite difficult. It was quite kind of into kind of songs and music as well. I'm quite into the sonic, musical nature of poetry and language, and that's probably where I've come into it. And recently, that kind of comes back because I've got interest in sound and trying to make sound poetry. So that's never gone away. I went to Sussex University in Brighton, which is really, it's quite into its avant-garde poetry. And then I was also taught from quite a young age by Roddy Lumsden. And I think those two different approaches mean that I still have a very kind of wide taste in poetry. So that was kind of avant-garde, experimental, innovative work, and the more of the kinds of mainstream and then also the performance. I'm interested in all of that, which is probably why I've interested in editing a magazine, really, because I quite like the idea of the miscellany, and I quite like the idea of bringing eclectic work together.
That's what Poetry Wales does bring to the
table. Yeah, and it has done, for the past, obviously it's entering its 50th year.
It's even older.
Soon.
It's even older than Planet.
Yeah. And it's entering its 50th year, but in the last sort of 10, 15, 20 years, it's been quite international, and that's another thing that's really appealed to me. I have worked for the past number of years with two projects based here in Aberystwyth, Wales Literature Exchange and Literature mm-hmm. Across Frontiers, mm-hmm. Cyfnewid Llyn Cymru in Welsh, the Wales Literature Exchange. And so that's given me a massive international perspective. I've always been quite interested in cultures from around the world, but that's been quite handy for poetry because it's introduced me to lots of different scenes abroad and given me an appreciation of what translation is and introduced me to some poets that I probably wouldn't have come across living in England, which is quite kind of inward-looking. Wales is a bit more outward-looking, I think, which is another reason to be attracted to Poetry Wales.
Well, you've been engaged, then, it's fair to say, with poetry for some time, and also you do a lot of workshops and things with younger writers, emerging writers, shall we say?
Only that's something I've only been doing recently.
Oh, right, yeah.
But Poetry Wales, it was a big supporter of me when I was starting out writing. I think I published an early poem in Poetry Wales, and Zoe supported my work. And I know that Robert actually supported Zoe's mm-hmm. work as well. So there is a sort of continuity of a community of support for younger writers. And I really want to continue that.
Yeah.
And then yesterday I was here in Aberystwyth talking to the creative writing MA students. And they were writing really interesting work. And Wales is a really good place to sort of start out as a writer, I think. It's quite encouraging and supportive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think tight-knit is readily bandied around. But there is, you know, once you get your... Once the foothold is firm, you find a lot of support, I suppose.
Yeah.
Do you feel that Poetry Wales is an intrinsic part of that?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, when I moved to Swansea after I graduated, it was a very close-knit community there, and Poetry Wales was seen as important, and I started reading it quite early on. I hope it's seen as intrinsically important. It's quite kind of difficult to know, without travelling all over Wales, the kind of value of Poetry Wales and all the different kinds of scenes there are here. But all I know is that when I put something on Facebook about it, I've left Facebook in the meantime.
Oof,
but
when I put something
on Facebook, you know, so many people responded, not just in Wales, but all over the place, all over the UK and in beyond the UK as well. So there is a knowledge of Poetry Wales that's quite wide, so that's really encouraging.
Yeah, well,
it's difficult to know when you look at it from your own perspective.
Well, quite. But let's look at the timing of the thing for a second.
Yeah.
Your debut collection, Then Spree, launched, it was published, sorry, it's not a boat.
Yeah.
Was that late 2012?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I'd say it was a sort of mini collection, a pamphlet.
Yeah, it was quite small, but I believe our own reviewer, Laura Rainwright, called it imaginatively vast.
Yeah, that's so nice.
So it goes to show a size and everything. So it was quite positively received as well elsewhere. Where do you think then, you know, that Then Spree caught you? What was your feelings when it came out?
I was so excited to have something tangible in my hand, and it was a combination, I think, of quite a lot of hard work. And I'd been in London in a poetry workshop, and it was sort of quite a small group of poets that had been incredibly supportive, and to sort of launch the pamphlet kind of after a couple of years of working quite hard on poetry and being completely obsessed with it for a while. I'm still quite kind of immersed in it, but...
Do you still look back at it now? And
yeah, well, it's funny, isn't it? Because things move on quite quickly. So it was only maybe a year and a bit ago that it was published. But I already feel that I am writing quite differently already. But I think that's fine when it's a pamphlet, because it's the first sort of publication to show that you develop in different ways. But I'm really proud of it. You know, it was good.
Do you think the form of the pamphlet was helpful to you?
Yeah.
Because we will be releasing a review of the Rack Press collection from last year, and then this year's will also be up soon.
Obviously, it's got quite a long history, the pamphlet, of the sort of radical, quite ephemeral, sort of short. There's something very kind of prestigious and weighty about a full-length poetry collection, which I think there's probably too much weight placed on it, and I think the pamphlet is a great kind of staging post between those things, but not just that, in its own right, it's very interesting. Mm. I definitely wasn't ready to write a whole collection of work. I was ready to sort of do something on a smaller scale. And now, actually, I'm quite interested in maybe the pamphlet as something to contain a project, which maybe wouldn't go in a sort of collection of or a miscellany of different work. It's quite exciting because, there's Rack Press in Wales, and I'm quite interested in... At the moment, I'm talking to Boiled String Press in Swansea about doing a kind of little... It's not really a pamphlet, but like a little book. Actually, they're quite large format, but they're kind of another sort of lo-fi project, really, that works... There's this sort of really old traditional idea that you kind of publish your poems in a magazine, and then you publish your first collection, second collection, third collection. And I like the way that the pamphlet breaks away from that and recognising that the poet as an artist is... really various in their output, and they don't just write in this sort of sequential way.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Sounds like you've already got your own personal projects with Boiled, boiled string press. Quite like that name.
Well, that's still sort of in the pipe. It's sort of in discussion. Yeah,
but what it means is you're still actively working as a poet. Do you feel that there might be a tension between you working as editor of Poetry Wales and then carry on working on your own stuff?
I can't imagine not doing my own stuff. It's sort of difficult to imagine, not writing, although the hiatus of working hard on sort of something administratively, that can kind of put poetry on hold, but I definitely will carry on. And I would like to publish a sort of full-length collection as well as another pamphlet. So, and then in the last 2 years, been doing lots of collaborations with other poets and other artists as well, and that has been immensely invigorating, and I'd like to carry on those sort of projects as well. And actually, I'm quite interested in bringing kind of the collaboration thing to Wales when I actually kind of get settled in here. So I've been kind of travelling a lot in the past 2 years, and I've been in London a lot, and I'd like to work a lot more with Welsh artists here as well. So
editing a poetry magazine is a form of collaboration.
Mm. Yeah, it's really, it's all about making kind of relationships with people and finding out what writers are doing at the moment, what their projects are, forming friendships and getting people to write reviews. You know, that's all a kind of sort of a process of networking and relationship building, which I'm quite used to because of Literature Across Frontiers and Wales Literature Exchange are both sort of networking based around the idea of cooperation between different partners around Europe and around the world. And I'm up for everything to be collaborative, really, because as soon as you start kind of excluding or kind of blinkering your vision and just concentrating on your own work, then I think that's when things become elitist or they become boring. And so, the Poetry Wales should be as open and as collaborative as possible. Every magazine will have all these different contributors in there, and it's really exciting to start kind of receiving articles and reviews from people, to hear the different voices and the different ways that people write. It's really nice. And
you mentioned reviews there. Obviously, yeah. It's a huge part of it. Did you read any of the reviews for Then Spree?
Yeah, I read my reviews.
Yeah.
Some people don't read their reviews, do they? But yeah, no.
I think almost everybody does.
Yeah.
I think anybody who says,
you're
too
curious,
I don't.
Really.
The critics are.
Yeah. I had a really interesting review from several. Yeah, no, all, I found that all the reviews were encouraging.
Yeah.
But they were, you know, where they had picked up on kind of tensions or things that weren't so kind of strong, they were really insightful and really interesting. Mm. And I think the reviewing process is so important to a writer.
Yeah.
So important to get kind of candid reviews of your work to sort of steer you out of any kind of corners that you might have gotten into. It's difficult though to, there has been a culture of poor reviewing where I think anyway in the moment where, particularly in poetry, where things are getting always these glowing reviews or descriptive reviews where the reviewer doesn't reveal their cards, really doesn't really say what they felt when they read it, or doesn't really kind of reveal the actual real response that they had to the work. And I can't, you know, force reviewers to be negative, but I think that
try.
It's so important. Well, I actually recently heard that one particular editor of Poetry Magazine, I won't say who, said that they wanted this magazine to be a place where poets would fear to be reviewed. And I think it's really important that Poetry Wales keeps kind of reviewing stuff coming out of Wales, because sometimes that's the only place where the smaller publications will get a review at all. So it's really important that we have this healthy debating culture of work. You can see in some cultures where reviewing a sort of fallen away and the quality does go down, I think, over time of work. So it's so important, and it's so important that we don't get caught in our own kind of parochial circles of friends, that we kind of keep being critical.
Reviewing is quite the art, though. It's
difficult. Really, really hard work.
The point is that you've got people who like to read a certain type of review, and you've got certain people who like to write a type of review. And then, you know, a lot of different combinations can happen there between writer and reader, what's a good review? It's impossible to answer because mm-hmm. almost everybody will respond differently. But, you know, you'll have your own vision. So you kind of touched on it there. Where do you see sort of that tension lying between critical and technical? Where's the middle ground, do you think?
I hope that the middle ground is a sort of honesty, really, of what the reviewer thought and felt when they read the book, and that they do pick up any technical issues. I think there's a tension in there, and that's what's interesting. I don't enjoy reading reviews which don't go into any depth, that skim across the surface. It is problematic in a way that the negative reviews are the ones that are more interesting for readers to read.
It's entertaining stuff, really,
isn't it?
It's
entertaining, although it's probably dangerous, isn't it? That we kind of
It goes against that idea of the close-knit community again, doesn't it? Because there's another tension there. Because there's only, let's face it, there's only so many people that can deliver sort of a quality review.
But I do think that maybe it's a little bit of a myth that there's this tiny pool of reviewers, because there's also lots of young critics who are not poets and who are working on PhDs, or there's people outside of the UK who write excellent and read excellent English but maybe aren't based here, or maybe I'm setting myself up. Maybe I'm being too naive. Maybe once I've actually got something in my hand I can't find a reviewer for, I'll be a bit more cynical. But I do think that there is lots of people can review. Maybe lots of people don't want to review because they don't want to feel like they need to make a definitive judgment on a book. Because that's one thing that is difficult for a reviewer, is to say, this is what I think. And then you never know, they might pick up the book again and find that there was all these other things, which is one of the wonderful things about reading any kind of literature, is that your response isn't immediate. You don't make a sort of set judgment. You can return to things and they'll yield something different. So it is difficult for a reviewer to lay that down. It can't be that difficult.
But, you know, we mentioned you're a published poet.
Yeah.
You're now going to be editing. What's the main difference there? I know that sounds like a stupid question, but, you know.
Well, I suppose before I am a writer, I'm definitely a reader, and the reason I write is because I enjoy reading so much, and reading is creative as well as writing. So I think I come to Poetry Wales as a reader, first of all, that enjoys all kinds of different work and likes getting excited about new work. I suppose I can empathise with poets, and I can spot where they've done something really brave or something really different, and that probably comes from my writing experience. And I'm also interested in the process of writing as well, although there's a sort of concern among sort of poetry magazines or magazines in general that the literary magazines are set up more for writers than they are for readers. There's a concern that we focus too much on process and not on enjoyment of reading. So I'm aware of that tension as well. I think people are intrigued by process.
I believe so, because it's hard to sort of put a person's day together. And one tends to put sort of a creative day on a pedestal a little bit, but it's, you know, it's breakfast, it's work, it's lunch, it's work, it's supper, it's bed. But the process in between all that, you know, it's quite interesting. And I think people are genuinely intrigued by how other people's minds work.
Yeah, I am. And I'm really interested in interviews. And recently I was thinking how interesting an actor is. And I'd really like to read some interviews with some actors. And then, although, because acting is such a sort of showbiz thing, the interviews weren't really as interesting as I hoped they might be. They weren't in the psychology, you know, they were all sort of
sometimes
taken up
with
the glamour and the kind of relationships between the directors. But sometimes you get into that kind of mindset of an artist and how they work. And I'm really intrigued by that process of how anyone gets to anything, how anyone gets enjoyment or has their mind blown by art. That's really interesting to me, because it's never going to be the same for everybody.
Well, let's talk about process then. Where do you sit on this sliding rule of work for 15 minutes, then watch TV for half an hour?
Well, it's a constant battle against the distraction of the internet. I've got this new program which blocks the internet now for as long as you want it
you
to.
You could just use pen and paper, of course, rather
yeah,
than...
I could, but I actually find that... Well, I like to take notes, and I love note-taking. I love keeping notebooks. The speed of the screen and the keyboard works with how... I actually find that I can't write fast enough. My hands, you know, and then I can't even... And I've got a notebook in front of me, and I can't really... read what I've written. So,
but you know, there's a syndrome for that because I suffer from it.
Right.
Yeah, your brain is incredibly quick, but for me, I like to say my hand is just too slow.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, there's something about the screen and the keyboard that probably works for me, and shutting myself off the internet and any distractions is really helpful, especially for the kind of drafting, editing process.
Mm. So, what are the nature of your notes?
They're usually things that I've heard or words that come into my head or phrases. I'm quite into the sound of things. So, yeah, I'm quite into eavesdropping and listening in on work or what people are saying on the train, although that can get really irritating as well if you travel on the train a lot. So those are my notes. My notes also, they sometimes have whole poems in them, yeah, that I've written on in transit. And sometimes it's a process of translating the notes into something. You're listening in on yourself when you're writing as well. Although, yeah, lately I've been working on one particular project, which has just been me at the computer for about 3 hours writing and writing and writing without taking any notes or going back over anything and just going for it. Because I'm inhabiting your kind of unconscious.
Yeah. Thing. Well, the different type of input that you're working on there, you know, yeah. Doing the train of thought sort of writing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the or notation and then sort of careful construction. It's all worth.
Well, I'm really interested at the moment. That's one of my current kind of interests is the unconscious and how it works in sort of, it sort of rules my hand sometimes when I'm writing. And there's a poet that I really like at the moment called Mark Waldron, and he works a lot inside that kind of unconscious mind, and he talks a lot about dreams and about his sort of the idea of the id, and he has he's got quite a big awareness of psychoanalysis as well, so I'm quite sort of engaged with that work, and yeah, recently have been thinking a lot about that composition or moment of being in the unconscious and then trying to, you know, like figure out how to switch it off when you need to write an email to somebody. Or
are you going to be looking at this type of writing?
That's just one type of writing. Yeah. I mean, I have got some, I'm quite excited. I've got some poems from Mark Waldron in the first issue that I'm working on, but I'm interested in any poems that make me feel something, and that is really subjective to me, but anything that doesn't have a strong feeling in it, I'm not interested in. That can happen for a number of reasons. I suppose it can happen because it's technically not that adept, or it can be that it's an old idea or a stock phrase that doesn't have any meaning in it, or it could be that it's sort of too caught up in experiment and language. I do need to feel something. So recently I have been quite interested in sort of poetry that you could call teen noir.
Okay, so
it's like Sarah Peters from Canada or Melissa Lee Houghton.
This is an ideology which has been kind of corrupted, hasn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
by other trends which are ongoing.
Yeah, I think it's a sort of strong memory with the strong feeling of a memory, not necessarily the narration of a memory, but the sort of the place that you were in when you go back to those places and times. Yeah, I'm quite interested in that at the moment. That's just one of my tastes. I've got other tastes.
Yeah. It looks like, or it sounds
like...
Don't
send me too much confessional work.
that's what you're here for.
Don't send me too many outpourings. But yeah, please submit.
I'll have you. You'll be in tears by the end. talking about your early years in Sheffield. We're talking about your early years in Sheffield. You're based... Are you in London now? Is that right?
I was based in London until last year, and then I've been travelling a lot and been back in, at the moment I am in Sheffield, but my plan is that I'll be in Swansea, back in Swansea in the spring, so yeah, been quite itinerant really.
Yeah. Do you feel that more sort of UK-based approach is going to bring something different to Poetry Wales?
I think so. I yeah.
And is and you just mentioned that you're going to be moving to Swansea.
Yeah.
Is that part of your editorship?
It's definitely connected to the editorship, because I think if you want to get the most out of it, I think it's best to be in Wales talking to writers here. And also, you know, we want to do some events because it's the birthday of Poetry Wales soon. So it's definitely useful to be here in Wales. And I have been looking for somewhere outside of London to live that wasn't extraordinarily expensive to rent. So Swansea's good for that as well. So, it's quite cheap.
Well, depends.
You know, there are also a lot of artists and friends and poets there. It's a good, yeah.
What about your ideas of Wales, looking at it from afar? Was the interest in poetry, did that lead naturally to Poetry Wales because of your family connection?
I can't really go back to a point at which I say I remember feeling interested in Wales, because it was kind of very present. My mum probably felt like she was she missed it, so we talked about it a lot and we were here a lot. So I can't remember being particularly, but poetry for me has always come from Wales. It's always been rooted here, and I think it's possibly because just early life, but also because I've been influenced and inspired by some really radical, interesting people, and a lot of them have been living here in Wales, and so I have been drawn to it, maybe more so than others.
You know, it's a difficult question, it's that thing again of going back to trying to define almost the undefinable, because, you know, you ask somebody, describe the colour yellow, you know.
Yeah.
And we're lucky, because in the world of poetry, sometimes you have spikes of absolute recognition where you understand almost down to a molecular level what somebody's trying to tell you. And then on other occasions, of course, something washes over you. You're not entirely sure.
So when you apply that to ideas like Wales, feeling, whatever those ideas are, I always find that there's multiple viewpoints or multiple interpretations and layers to them. So to sort of edit a magazine called Poetry Wales is to recognise that there's sort of some multiple identities and different ways of thinking about a country. And maybe, for instance, I was, you know, in with Wales Literature Exchange, I was in Patagonia recently. We did an exchange between Argentinian and Chilean writers, and I went along as Wales Literature Exchange representative, and people would have a very strong sense of Wales in Patagonia, and they would say, oh, you're from Wales, and I'd have to sometimes say I'm English and I'm Welsh. And it's also known as Britain. And people would be like, what? And that happens quite a lot. It's also known as Britain. And then you're like, oh. And I suppose I can't get away from being a feeling of Britain, because I've always had but I don't feel very Scottish, I suppose, or Irish. Well, actually, I do feel a bit Irish, but because lots of my family are Irish and lots of my boyfriend's Irish. And so I do have this sort of multiple identity, and I'm hoping that's an understanding which I'm bringing to Poetry Wales, because I understand there's lots of different ways of writing from and in, and the magazine itself is not just going to support Welsh writing, it's also a forum for British writing and international writing, and we don't live anymore in a place where we only consume one kind of national culture. You know, we're on the internet all the time, and we consume all kinds of different things all the time. To reflect that in the pages of a magazine is really important. You know, I'm aware that there are magazines that still do only publish Scottish writing, for instance, or only publish Cornish writing, and I don't think it's very useful to keep those kind of boundaries so tight. I think that to open it up is really important. And we were in the office of the Welsh internationalist.
You are.
So, and I'm an internationalist, definitely. So.
But so, you know, what are your ideas on internationalism
lots of ideas. Talking about Welsh writing in particular, Wales Literature Exchange have been really good at getting Welsh writing out there, translated into multiple languages, not just in Europe, but also in India and Latin America now recently. And then there's an exchange, so that comes back to Wales, and we've had Indian poets coming here, we've had Chinese writers and lots of different people going to the Translator's House Wales in Tynwyth, translating loads of different Welsh writing. And that exchange of different international voices is so important for a writer and for a translator, because if you don't have those influences from other worlds, then you know your writing is kind of unaware of those other worlds, and it can become very claustrophobic. So for instance, I talked a bit earlier about how I'm kind of interested in both avant-garde and mainstream poetry. Outside of Britain, there isn't so much of these divisions of mainstream performance and avant-garde, that, you know, there's all kinds of different poetics, and to bring those other poetics in close contact with writing here is so important, as well as getting those voices out there as well. So that's probably very influenced by that background. And I'm very influenced as a writer by German, Central European, Polish writing. Recently, there's some really exciting Chilean poets that I've been reading. Yeah, I'm interested in reading all of that. I'm not so interested in only ever reading British poetry, which actually still happens quite a lot. I think people are quite still internalised and stuck in a sort of British mode.
Yeah, you know, the idea of only being open to certain cultures, you know, it's difficult to even be that way these days, what with the influx of information.
Well, I would say it's difficult, but yeah, I think definitely that technology has changed that, and we are more open, but there's still a resistance, I think, to the idea of translation. There's still the kind of thought that poetry is the best words in the best order. I think I just mutilated Coleridge's quote, and that translation can only ever be a corruption of the original, beautiful, kind of untouchable object, which obviously you can see from the way that I've described that. I disagree with that. And so I think there is still a resistance to poetry and translation. And there was a massive poetry festival in London at the time of the Olympics, Poetry Parnassus, and the audiences weren't massive. They were substantial, but there probably could have been a lot more people there. And it was an extremely amazing opportunity that there was people coming from everywhere for a week. People probably preferred to go to their open mics. Sorry, that's probably quite negative, isn't it?
One person's negative is another person's two lumps of sugar. The idea of reflecting culture as well, because obviously if we're talking about international aspects, what you're talking about primarily is receiving from outside. What about your ideas of shooting culture out into the world? You know, the Poetry Wales in itself is obviously an international magazine.
Yeah.
What does that mean? You know, have you got any ideas about spreading it here and there? And also being a kind of ambassador of sorts for Welsh / British poetry.
Well, I think that a lot of work has already been done by the previous editors in building an international reputation. And I can see that from just mentioning it online and some of the people that are coming to me via digital media from quite a far away, so that's good. I think that there's lots of connections between poets, which probably helps widen the knowledge of Welsh writing abroad. And I obviously will say this, but the internet is obviously completely paramount to this. They've been working on Seren, who hosts Poetry Wales, they've been working on a digital edition, so you can use it for iPhone and iPad and non-Apple products, hopefully, as well. So you can get Poetry Wales on your kind of mobile devices as well.
So that's
hoping to make an international impact, and also just, you know, using social media in an innovative way as well as your ordinary way.
When are you hoping for your first issue to be the first digital one?
I think so. We are hoping for that. Yeah. Let's see.
It's difficult with obviously more creative work, isn't it? Because people are a bit more protective. But the point from a poetry perspective is, of course, you've got a lot of poetry in there, which people are a little bit afraid of when it comes to digital products.
Interestingly, people, according to editorial assistant that I'm working with, Rebecca and Seren, people have been agreeing to have their poems published online or by ticking a box on a form for a number of years now. And they've been open to that, which is really great. I don't know if they know that their poems will be in people's pockets. I don't know if they'll have a problem with that. I'm not a digital native, but I'm probably pre-native. You know,
what a horrible term.
And it's horrible, isn't it? Yeah, the word native isn't very nice anyway, but I'm too much steeped in that world to sort of think of what everyone...
I have a lot of conversations like this.
There's a fear, I think, of people think that their work will be stolen on the internet, but I don't see why that fear is more pronounced for the internet. Maybe it's more of a mass sort of action, but there's been some plagiarism sort of scandals recently, but I don't...
But that's nothing to do with... digital stuff.
No, it's nothing to do with that. It's to do with people. Well,
people nicking stuff. That's what it's
nicking
about.
Stuff, or not being particularly imaginative or original. Really,
it's easy. It's easy to fall into that trap, isn't it? Because people perceive a wider audience. I don't necessarily see wider. I just think it's more interested.
You mean on the internet, people?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had a poem on a magazine called The Quietus a few weeks ago, and that was, it's a magazine of film, music, comment on lots of different cultural things, and it got like a much bigger audience for anything I've ever published before. So that was great. So I think the internet is fantastic for... broadening audiences, I suppose. People still respect print magazines more, though. I think this is true because people definitely, according to someone like Roddy Lumsden, who's been the kind of series editor of the Best British Poetry Anthologies, which all involve reading all the magazines produced in Britain, produced every year, and then collating all the best poems from these different magazines. According to him, people are still sending their best work to print magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So they still see the print object as the kind of prestigious object.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably because on the internet there is a proliferation of all kinds of work, all kinds of bad, mad and good work. And there's still a reputation then. But I don't know how that's going to change in the future. No. I don't know if things will be different. I just want to add one more thing to the internationalism thing, is that I think the live performance of poetry is equally as important as the publication of it. So, and there's some really fantastic new festivals and old festivals in Wales at the moment, the North Wales International Poetry Festival and Fiction Fiesta, and also festivals abroad that Welsh poets are appearing at. I think that it's becoming more and more popular, actually, as live events. And I certainly love listening to poetry read out live. It's a totally different way of consuming poetry. Some people prefer to be able to go back over work and study it in depth on the page, but I quite like listening.
Well, that's what we're all about here on the Planet Poetry Podcast. That's what we're trying to do, is marry, you know, the best of it, and then bring it all via the power of sound.
It's your ears.
Yeah, right. Just a quick note that we've got a little chat with Zoe Scolding and John Potent from the North Wales International Poetry Festival. Check that out in our... you'll see it floating around on this page somewhere. And also, when we've got guests in the office here, we like to try and grab them, not necessarily tie them down, but try and get them to perform a poem for us. Would you be happy to do that?
Yes.
Well, what's it called?
It's called Mossy Coat.
Is it from Thensbury?
No, it's just written after when Thensbury was published.
But... We should also note that Thensbury Published by Salt.
Yep.
It's available. Crack on to the Salt Publishing website. I can never remember the terms, but I'm sure Bing or Google.
Yeah,
I have to
you'll
say
find
Bing because I feel like Google have a total monopoly. So I'm trying to sneak in some other search engines. Bing. What's the other one? Jeeves. Keep them alive, people. They deserve their place there. But anyway, so you're going to perform Mossy Coat for
us. Yeah, Mossy Coat. I wanted to live out of party bags and dream daily in bread-making references. I wanted to write about haunted styes and brown trousers, the look of champagne on your face, the look of right nice, right nice. I would write about sealing practices, I said. I wanted Ermintrude or any woman by that name to come to my party. I thought about how I'd like pieces of his muscles to keep for the night. I wouldn't waste them. And of course I thought about Mossy Coat. She singles out the bad men, the ghosts from the guests. Here's Baba Yaga's distant rumble. I wanted the bad man to come back and fetch me. I wanted a loom as a bed. I said my time with me should be limited. I wanted masochistic dressing up mode. I wanted furlongs of him, and pussy was a word I could think about. Pussy, cunt, mossy coat, or maybe a rap on the word sundress. I couldn't think about I anymore, it was bad for me. So I thought about him all dressed up like a pig herder or a mountain lion, and about wedges and my moccasin together look with a heel. Look, Pocahontas, look. But I wasn't sporting either. Instead, I still hadn't put my trousers on. I thought about Mossy Coat and how she was a good role model for me, especially for finding the right man and leaving him with the right shoe. I wanted Baba Yaga to come and eat me up. I wanted to come over as a nasty piece of work, especially as a piece of work, and also that he'd be shocked at what I'd become. Personality-wise, I wanted to be a mismatched underwear set. Certainly, I was keen to become a burden. I can't help the way I feel, I said, especially when it comes to spanking. And what would my mother think about what I'd become in the coat she made me out of moss, that fine magic moss? I thought about death briefly but regularly and not in a suicidal way. I have been managing fine by myself, I said to him. I only joke when I say I need you as my butler.
Great, thanks for that.
Thanks.
What do you feel when you sort of read out your poetry?
I love reading out my poetry. I had a really interesting course with this amazing voice coach called Kristen Linklater that sort of helped kind of connect up the feeling of the poem with the way that you perform it in your voice. Which is actually very difficult because your body kind of holds back your voice, maybe through nervousness or through the emotional kind of way that your body kind of closes around your throat and holds emotion in. So I'm really interested in that and I really enjoy reading. Well, sometimes it is more nerve-wracking than it usually is, depending on what the situation is, yeah.
So you've thought about it a bit more than most. Do you do little warm-ups and things?
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I did learn some really amazing, fun warm-ups, which I probably should do more, really.
Games for
actors.
Instead
of going like, woo, sure. All these like different like funny sounds, but you usually have to be somewhere kind of private to do them all because they're quite weird.
Yeah. Do you enjoy performing?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, definitely. I'm performing in the Cardiff Women's Writing Festival in March.
Great.
So I'm really excited about that. And I'm performing at the Dylan Thomas Centre at the end of March. So I'm really excited about these kind of nice, meaty, long kind of performances. One of the things about performing is it's great to know the poem really well and be able to read it so you've remembered it. I think that is kind of quite scary as well.
It changes the way that you read the poem as well, because that's obviously there's a huge jump between reading something and then actually delivering it, not off the paper. I mean, that's almost a totally different poem then.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, the sound exists in a new way, and you can read a poem differently, or you can hear something different in it.
Talking of recognition as well, there's been a bunch of poets seen at the Buckingham Palace, recently an ex-editor of Poetry Wales and plenty of contributors. Well, how do you feel about sort of accolades coming from above?
Well, I can't say that I'm completely immune. It's good to get recognition and or not to get attention for the work that you've been doing. I didn't want to go to Buckingham Palace. I did really want to go to Buckingham Palace because I was incredibly curious about it. But in the end, I didn't go. I went down to the pub instead and met up with one of my friends. Part of the reason was is because I'm really kind of a massive anti-monarchist. And I'm sure that lots of people who were there at the event were also anti-monarchist, but I just felt that I'd be so awkward with my like glass of champagne. And there's a moment where you have to kind of bow, curtsy or refuse when you meet the Queen. And I just couldn't bear the idea of this awkward moment where I'd be like, because you're not going to say to the Queen, nice to meet you, Mom. Can you be abolished sometime soon, please? Like, it's just a bit rude because I don't have anything against them personally. So it's just a kind of institution. So that that was awkward. And also the kind of idea that this was the sort of the elite poetry world. Although I found out later that all kinds of people were, you know, it wasn't the elite, but it was all kinds of different people from all over. But I was a bit kind of fearful of joining that kind of elite in the very few early weeks of editing the magazine. Mm-hmm. And also because I was aware that Poetry Wales was a really radical political magazine when it was first set up. And, certainly. You know, I was pretty sure that it wasn't a monarchist, sycophantic outfit.
I'd really like to know who you don't consider to be the elite.
Well, I'm joking. I guess it wasn't, it wasn't just your sort of white, older male editors. There was all kinds of diverse people invited, or some who didn't go as well. So
I wasn't invited. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
It's a disgrace.
I should have invited you.
But also, you said you went to the pub, but you just said you could have had loads of free champagne.
I could have had free champagne. But then, who's paying for the champagne?
Well, the taxpayer.
Well, I am.
It's yours.
But also, I just thought, it's easy to get caught up in that, it was a bit glamorous. It's easy to get caught up in the world of poetry, partly because I'm, really interested in poetry, but I suddenly sort of had this realisation that I hadn't seen my friends in ages and that wouldn't it be nice to go to the pub and catch up with them and see how they were doing. And I felt like I needed a bit of a reality check maybe as well. And there's a reason why I like poetry, and it's not because it's about rubbing shoulders with important people. It's because I like it just because of what it makes me feel.
So you went and had a pint of stout instead.
I don't like stout. I had a pint of something. I can't remember what.
Well, that's great. Thanks. We've taken your time more than enough. And thank you very much for coming in. Are you excited for your first issue?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
I believe you said it was June is going to be the...
Yeah, it's June one. And we've got some things about poetry and comics.
Lovely.
We've got some kind of experimental essays. We've got poems from really interesting poets as well, so I'm quite excited about it. Yeah,
great. And you can get all the information you'll ever need about Poetry Wales on the website. Yeah. Anyway, thanks a lot for coming
Thank
in.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great. We're going to go and have some lunch now. Will you join us?
Yes, that'd be lovely.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Well, thanks you very much to Helen, who's been producing the show today. Also, thank you to Nia for coming in. And last thanks, as always, goes to you, listener. Thank you for tuning in, and hopefully we'll see you next time.